So welcome, everybody, to the next edition of our HTLD working group. On the agenda today, we just have a couple of items on the agenda today, in addition to our new time, and apologies on the confusion on my original agenda that I sent out yesterday. My UTC conversion is a little challenged, I think. First order of business, does anybody have any updates they'd like to submit to the draft agenda that was sent out? Okay, I'm going to call roll very quickly here, and then we'll sort of start digging into the details. If you don't hear me call your name, please let me know. I've got Jonathan Frakes on, Mikey O'Connor, David Piscitello. David is supposed to be Piscitello. You've got a little typo on there. John McElwain, Mike Pelage, Derek Andre, Eric Brown, Evan Leibovich, and Simon McKella. Did I miss anybody? Okay, great. I guess all of you on the call, note the new meeting time. There will also be a new meeting time for next week. The new meeting time is new UTC time for those in the States. It'll be the sort of the same time after our daylight savings time switch. So just note that there are new meeting times going forward on the Wednesdays. Today we've really got two agenda items. Mike Pelage has asked for some time to talk about some outstanding issues, and then we're going to dig back into the controls. And as usual, if anyone's got any desired changes to the agenda, just kind of jump in now, and we'll get that out there and get you some floor time as well. Okay, all with right. That, Mike, go ahead, take it away.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep this real brief, everyone. For some of you, such as Mikey, Jonathan, who also participate in the vertical integration working group, you're aware that there is discussion about sending some questions to ICANN to seek some clarification in connection with the resolution. So one of the things, based upon that discussion, that I think we could perhaps learn from or perhaps follow is to take some of the issues where we have had some internal debate regarding, you know, voluntary, compulsory, indemnification, some of these different issues, and perhaps send that letter off to ICANN. Again, this would be a parallel process. We're still going to continue to do our work, but hopefully by getting a response from ICANN regarding these questions, prior to us writing the final report, will allow us to, if you will, issue the final report with sort of all the loose ends potentially tied up. So that's just something that I, again, put out there, and over the course of the next couple of days in advance of next week's meeting, I will circulate some questions we potentially may want to ask as far as clarification, and would look to the group to add or enhance or refine those questions prior to the group signing off on that particular piece of correspondence. So that is the one thing I just wanted to raise and, if you will, just put down a placeholder for that potential action item in the next week or so. The one other thing, I'll open that up as to any questions from anyone. Okay, no, that's fine. Andy, the one thing I was just looking at here that we may want to talk about briefly before jumping into the controls is I think we need to, perhaps you could sit there and talk for 5 or 10 minutes regarding our next snapshot. The public comment on this snapshot, I believe, is coming to a close in the next 2 weeks. Hold on, I can go to the ICANN website rather quickly. But do you want to sit there and talk about what you envision for sort of putting together in the next snapshot and how we'll go about doing that, perhaps before jumping into the continuation of the controls? Would you be able to do that?
Yeah, definitely. So I'll just take a minute on that and then obviously open up to questions. So if I look at what we've got sort of in development on the wiki, we have a lot of additional content to look at around the controls themselves. So the idea that I had was obviously looking up to the wiki and grabbing the wiki new wiki material and adding that to the development snapshot. So a sort of an incremental upgrade to last development snapshot. I think the thought I had was let's sort of keep it additive. So keep the snapshot that we had last time, keep the elements that are the same that we had last time, perhaps note that there haven't been any changes in those areas, but add to the areas that are new and the control areas. I've also got some additional content I'm trying to get up there. I'll probably get up early next week so we can talk about it on next call. It's around some thoughts on sort of the report card and the certification approach. Now we've got some material out there on both of those options, if you will, but I wanted to sort of consolidate the words around that and get a draft out there we can all look at and start commenting up and changing as well. So there's likely to be a piece on that. And time permitting, I'm going to try to get a piece on some thoughts on quality of assessors. And what that means is presumably whether we go a report card or a certification or another type of route, there'd have to be certifiers that could come out and do certification that controls were in place. For instance, on the report card, the half or full green requires a certifier to come in and certify that controls are in place. And on the report, certification model, to become certified, you would have to have some assessor come in and say, right, your controls are in place so that you could achieve that certification. So presumably there's some need to define what the qualities would need to be to become an assessor. In other words, what would give the community comfort that somebody that's assessing these controls was a good assessor, and good being what qualifications do they have? I'm starting to try to gel some thoughts there. Obviously, love to talk about that on this call if anyone has thoughts. But my initial thoughts were there's a couple of options. The easiest option would be to take a look at some of the existing models that are out there, the existing programs that are out there, perhaps the ISO 27000, perhaps PCI has been mentioned in this call. So look at the groups that are valid assessors for those programs and perhaps provide sort of a grandfather mechanism. So if assessors were valid to be assessors for those types of programs, allow them to be assessors to the HSTLD program. That's one sort of option. Another option is to come up with a clean set of requirements from the HSTLD program side. So to create our own sort of bar to jump over to become an assessor, that's another option. You could hybridize the two. So say that you could be a member of a certain set of these existing sort of bodies of assessors and or be qualified to be an assessor through criteria that this group creates as sort of a third option. And that's about as far as I've gotten on that thought. I don't know if I'm going to have enough time to gel that thought into content. But from a snapshot perspective, certainly the new controls would be in there. And to the extent that the group members come up with additional content or I can get some of my thoughts out there, I think that would be great to get out for public scrutiny as well. So that's my quick 5-10 minute talk. I'd definitely love to get feedback on that.
All right. Thanks, Andy. So anyone on the group as far as that proposed next steps regarding our next incremental snapshot? Frank, Mikey, David, John, Evan, Simon, anyone have a comment on that?
This is Evan.
Evan, go.
Mikey, I'd like to get in the queue.
Okay.
Andy, quick question in terms of the assessment issues. Is it possible to separate the controls into subjective versus objective? And by that I mean there's certain kind of controls where somebody can come in and say, yes or no, have they met this specific thing? And it's almost like a due diligence process as opposed to requiring somebody with subject matter expertise. There's some controls where you say, well, you have to have sufficient of something. Well, that ends up being subjective, and you need somebody with expertise in the field. If it's just a matter of do they have X, then that's almost a due diligence thing that doesn't require subject matter expertise necessarily. I'm wondering if it's reasonable or useful to break the controls down that way so we can see which of them are just objective and can be done in a due diligence manner and which of them require judgment calls.
That's an interesting question, Evan, and that comes up in other types of assessment models as well. And typically, this sort of the binary questions are assigned to controls that would be that would have some level of confidence that they wouldn't change often, versus a control that might have to have a subject matter expert come in because they do change often. And what I mean by that is, so if you look at the I think what you're describing in the objective side, let me take a stab at this. So controls, for instance, that would talk about the quality of encryption. Well, technology changes a lot, so you don't necessarily want to say in a certification program, you know, TLDs need to use brand XYZ encryption, right? Because that encryption brand may change tomorrow as technology changes. So you want, rather what you want to do is you want to put that a TLD has some level of encryption and you put the qualities of that encryption that would be desirable into the control. That allows the control to be valid with changing technology, but it also requires that an assessor have some level of subject matter expertise to determine that whatever technology is used is a good and valid technology still and meets the criteria. So I think that's what you're meaning when you talk about the objective side, and that's absolutely true. On the subjective side, there are some controls that you can conceive that wouldn't necessarily be tied to things that change very frequently, if at all. And in those instances, you can make them more binary. In other words, do you have this or specific thing or not? And as you're mentioning, those types of controls are neat because you can save a lot of time in the assessment of the controls because it can be almost like a checklist, like do you have it or not, yes or no,
right,
versus what are you using, why are you using it, and does it make sense, which is a longer series of things to go through from an assessment perspective.
Right.
So I can say I do a lot of these types of assessments for sort of for clients of mine of different types, and usually what we'll try to do when we're coming in and doing them is split the controls in that way. So what are the controls that are the fastest for us to do? Let's cut through those as quickly as we can. And maybe even make a checklist for the clients that we're going out to do those assessments so we can request those controls up front and make the effort faster. And then work out a process for how we're going to have a dialogue around the controls that are more objective. So there's certainly good dimensions to think about there. I'm really sort of roundabout talking about this because I'm thinking about it as I'm talking about it too. So the answer is we certainly can sort of note sort of what are the binary controls and what are the more subject matter or objective controls. I don't know how you'd want to do that. What do you just want to, like, put?
The only thing I'm suggesting right now is to have a look at the controls that have the word appropriately or adequately within the control, because that's something that ends up being a judgment control, a judgment of what's adequate or what's appropriate. There's some controls that don't have that, you know, as you say, it's a checklist. But any time, like, when I look through the controls and I see the word appropriate, well, that immediately sort of infers a judgment call.
Right, and it would immediately infer a longer look at that control, if you will, from a timeline perspective, and also a subject matter expert that was qualified to really look at it, right? Those are the two real sort of criteria differences between the two. Do you think it would be, so in its current model, I've sort of left that up to the assessor, right? It's not, that level of clarity is not baked into the actual full workspace draft, if you will. I guess my question is, do you think it makes sense to try to get a column that says that notes that or not, or should we just leave that up to the language of the control itself? I mean, we don't need to answer that question now, Evan. I'm just kind of, I'm trying to build a thought around this with you, I think.
Understood.
All right. Mikey, you're next up. Go.
Thanks. This is Mikey. I'd like to build a little bit on Evan's idea in another dimension. A lot of these controls are pretty well understood outside the ICANN context. And so I think in those cases, a PCI expert or something else could be sort of cross-branded or cross-certified into being an assessor for those sorts of controls. And then I guess what I'd like to think about is the possibility of segmenting the list into controls like that versus controls which are sort of ICANN and domain name DNS specific. And in a way, I think that might help me get over the difficulty I'm having on another dimension with this, which is a lot of this just strikes me as sort of out-of-the-box, generic, best practice, industry practice, security stuff. And it's almost a cut and paste out of, and in fact you've shown us the sources, and I don't have any difficulty with that at all. But I think in a way the most interesting part of this discussion is going to be the part that isn't coming from those. And I think that as we flesh that out, we also want to identify assessors who are familiar with that, because a straight out of the box PCI assessor isn't going to be able to do a real good job, I don't think, of assessing the sort of DNS ICANN related dimensions of this high security TLD stuff. And that, I think, might be the core essence of the hard work that we need to do.
This is Dave. Can I get in the queue?
Sure, Dave. Andy, do you want to respond, or do you want Dave to go, and then perhaps you could jointly respond?
Why don't I quickly respond, because I think this is a good, really good dialogue, and then Dave will pass on. So Mikey, that's a very good observation, and one of the things that I'd draw your attention to is there are some controls that are in here that have NA next to them. In the column of where did we get them from, they have NA in them. And those are the controls that really don't come from any of the standards that I've sort of used as source resources. So they're already sort of identified. Those the controls that wouldn't be, or I didn't have a source for in my knowledge set, are sort of already called out with that NA column. And you can also see that a lot of those questions that I have with the question marks we went over last week, and we'll maybe go over a little bit this week as well, are largely in the NA columns. And this gets to your sort of, I think you and Evan's sort of observation that there's a list of controls that are sort of DNS-ish, for lack of a better descriptor. That's where a lot of them are. I don't have a solution necessarily, but I'm sort of trying to draw the attention there that I think we qualify those controls with that NA already. And it may be a good sort of exercise to look at that and sort of think about or internalize how we would look at the quality of an assessor from that perspective.
This is Mikey. Let me just follow up, and then I'll be done. I think that what we might be able to do is if we could settle on an industry, I'll pick one at random. I'll throw a dart and say PCI. And say, okay, part of our HSTLD is that if you're a registrar or a registry, you have to meet PCI compliance at whatever level. All done. And you can go off and get that certification pretty much any way you want. And if you have that, you're good. However, there is this other collection of things that we've developed which have to be added to the standard certification. And we have a lot of opinions and a lot of sources of qualified assessors for you to gain that additional certification and thus narrow the focus of the group to the non-standard stuff and essentially wave our hands at the standard stuff and say, it's standard stuff, go get one of those. But it's just a simplifying assumption that came to me. And I'm done.
All right, Dave, I think you're up now.
Go. Okay, thank you. This is Dave Piscitello. I'm real interested in Mike's analysis for a couple of reasons. I think that the original idea of the program was to accomplish precisely the two things that Mike's talking about. Establish a security framework and baseline, you know, for businesses that are doing, you know, businesses in domain registration and, you know, and registry services. And the second is to identify beyond that baseline a set of what I'll call sector or industry vertical compliance criteria, certification criteria, that allow us to say, you know, for our industry, just as there is for the healthcare industry, there are some very, very specific things that we believe would materially improve the landscape of the business and, you know, and the security of not only the assets for registrants, but the user experience. So I like that separation. And I think it's worth exploring whether we could actually go through and find an existing compliance criteria like PCI and say, we're really interested in ISO 27000 kinds of practices, and if you can get one of these certifications, great. In the meantime, in addition to that, there's this delta that distinguishes you above being a business that satisfies those criteria and puts you in kind of an elite status of people who are in the domain, you know, the domain industry sector. The only question I really have is whether there's a glove that fits, so to speak, among, you know, the PCI and other or equivalent standards for the business, and I think that's worth looking into.
This is Mikey. Can I jump back in for a sec?
Yep. Andy,
can I get
Mikey? Andy, let Mikey go, and then Andy, you have the floor next.
Thank you.
I think the glove that fits question is a really tasty one, and I'm really tempted to lobby for a pretty good glove instead of a perfect glove, just because it would be so much simpler to administer and obtain assessors and so on. And if, you know, if we could find an 80 or 85% fitting glove, you know, in the existing standards, and then if in the 15% or so that wasn't included, maybe draw those into our industry-specific pile.
Yeah, Mike, let me just point out, when I said glove that fits, I wasn't looking for 100% match. So I think that we're having an agreement here. The only thing I don't want to end up with is a situation where we decide not to pursue one particular set of controls, and then we end up in a long and elaborate argument over the suitability of other compliance programs.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think what we could do is sort of test the consensus of the group on the existing programs, and if there's one that seems pretty darn close, sort of give that one the stamp of approval, at least on the first round, and then really zero in. I think that the group would be better used, expertise of the group would be better used zeroing in on the stuff that's really unique to the domain name space, and trying to sort of avoid spending a whole lot of time worrying about network security and encryption and blah, 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 all that stuff that's sort of normal data center practices. I mean, it's not that it's not important. It's just that people already know how to assess that. But some of the stuff that goes on in terms of the relationships between registries, registrars, registrants, and end users are very tasty topics of conversation and a much better focus, I think, of the conversation of this group.
Hey, guys, this is Simon. Can I go on the end of the queue?
All right, Simon. Okay, Andy, I believe you had the floor next, and Simon's back.
Thanks, Mike. So actually, this is a good conversation, and it's one that actually these issues actually exist today, and let me give you some real quick examples. So a lot of my clients have multiple either regulations that they go through or certifications that they go through. Quick, for instance, is I've got a lot of clients that have to do Sarbanes-Oxley controls, but they're also ISO 27000 certified. That's a very common thing, and there can be overlap in a lot of those different types of control structures. So that's a good thing. And actually, what ends up happening is the clients over time begin to realize, well, I need to provide a certain control. It may be worded slightly different across a couple of these efforts, but the control is the same. The way I evidence that the control is working is the same, and they become real smart about it, and they basically store evidence of their controls and their description of their controls and so forth and provide them to the multiple needs. I kind of see that some of the controls within the HSTLD sort of what, Mikey, would feel forgive me, what I call the layup controls, the controls that are already, the blocking and tackling, the stuff that's already defined in other good security types of programs. Those layup controls, I sort of fully expect that there will be entities out there that, for instance, are ISO 27000 certified, and they would very easily be able to prove that because they already have to prove it for that certification. I think it's important to keep that control set as a part of this program because we still want to have, at the end of the day, good security control. So it's important to keep those controls in there as part of this program, but note that there are other programs that may cover this control, and that in a way will make it probably easier, especially for those organizations that already participate in those programs. I also do think that there are, and it's evidenced even in the early draft controls that we have on the wiki, there are a boatload of controls, and you're probably right. I didn't do a percentage breakdown, but they're probably 15 or 20% of the controls have this little insidious NA next to them. And again, those are controls I just couldn't come up with a good sort of tie into. And if in the language that we're using in this dialogue, I think that means, those are more TLD-specific controls. There's also a dialogue of have we got them all? There's probably more controls that are out there that I just didn't conceive of when I did the draft. So we need to sort of flesh that out as good as we can. But there are also controls that perhaps would require a lot more industry knowledge. And again, that's why I have a lot of the question marks in that area, because I don't know. I know enough to sort of start the control off. I sort of know enough to describe what I want the control to do, but I don't know that I'm using the right language and so forth. So again, I think this is a great conversation because it proves all of those things out. I'm going to let go of my little piece of the floor now. Simon, I think you're next.
Thanks. I think we, just listening, I think we're all kind of saying the same thing, which is you've got this chunk of controls that are going to come under PCI. Would make sense to get a PCI assessor in to assess those controls and could do that and provide some kind of tick that says, yeah, you meet all those. You've got a chunk of controls that are 27002. Again, you could get an ISO assessor in to assess those. Leaves us with that delta of controls, sort of the NAs as they're being called now. I wonder if there's a model that says, a chunk of those, we allow some kind of self-assessment, and that self-assessment can be submitting evidence of whatever the process is or the documentation that you keep. Quite how that, who and what, and how that would be assessed or viewed by, I don't know. And then there's that chunk that doesn't fall into self-assessment that we would need to find a proper assessment mechanism for and an assessor. But it feels to me like where there are existing standards and existing assessors out there, that's an easy win. We can say, well, look, you've got to meet that criteria, and that gets assessed by an ISO 27002 assessor. Does that make sense?
Okay, thank you, Simon. And one of the things with regard to self-assessment, that is one of the proposals that I had originally put in the report card proposal. So, Andy, perhaps you could respond to Simon regarding the self-assessment options and how that may intersect with the report card concept that has been discussed.
Yeah, sure. Actually, self-assessment is very good. It is a good mechanism to sort of report, to focus on controls that are important within an organization and report on them. The problem with that is that it's usually not as high quality or as trusted assessment as an assessment would be from a third, a qualified and trusted third party. And you can imagine why, right? So it's like, You go to an organization and they say that they've got something, and that's one level of comfort, versus you go to an organization and a very qualified third party says, yep, that organization's got something. There's a little more trust there because it's a third party sort of independently reporting on the existence of the control. So I think there is a quality improvement by getting or having a mechanism to get a third party in there. So, Simon, how would we do that, right? So the thought
I... Yeah, I absolutely agree. I just wonder whether there are some controls that we're prepared to, for the sake of trying to keep the administrative burden of the program down, there are some controls we'd be prepared to accept self-assessment for, and some where you're absolutely right, where having that independent view on it is absolutely vital.
So this is something that's sort of been kicking around in the back of my head, knowing that we'd have to sort of have this dialogue. So while I was creating the controls, it was back there, and now it's coming up to the surface. And one of the ways to look at that is, so there are sort of these controls that are going to be DNS-ish, if you will, sort of the HSTLD very specific. And then the question is, what is the nature of the control, and what type of control is it, and would it allow for a certain industry or existing program to understand or not? Or is it really so specific that there's really nothing out there that I could touch upon and say, you know, an expert in this type of regulation or this type of certification program just really wouldn't have any ability to deal with this? I'm not there in my thought yet, but for instance, if I look at, there's an NA called Charter Documents, and it talks about the HSTLD sponsor should verify whether the organizational charter documents have been made available to dot, 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 dot. That's a very specific, those charter documents themselves would be very specific to TLDs, but I can envision that there probably are assessor groups that are out there that would be able to understand charter documents. So they may not be DNS, super DNS tuned up, but if we wrote the control in a way that would be descriptive enough, they may be able to deal with it. I don't know if that's right or not. I think we need to continue to sort of improve the control while we have this dialogue and sort of kick around what I'll call the question of the qualities of the assessors. And I think that's something that we could probably focus on over the next few weeks. My commitment to the group is I'll try to write some thoughts on those options to the qualities of the assessors and push those up to the wiki so that we can all, as we normally do, sort of beat it up and test it out in our dialogue going forward.
This is Mike.
This is Brian.
Get back and forth.
All right. We have a series. We have Brian and Mikey that are in the queue. Brian, you haven't spoke. You can go first. Mikey, you're on deck. Go ahead, Brian.
Can I get in the queue after?
Yeah, Evan, too.
Evan, no problem. So it will be Brian, Mikey, and Evan. Is there anyone else who wants to get in the queue at this time? All right, Brian, you have
okay. I'm not sure I'm going to be adding any new thoughts here, but I think I'm following the bouncing ball. At Afilias, we've already been talking to PwC, our outside auditor, and we're anticipating that this program is likely to create some universe of new controls that are unique, that are not covered by any existing audits that are undertaken by us and in conjunction with PwC, and that would require some new form of audit. The conversation I'm hearing is going in the direction of suggesting a certification program that might be a mixed bag of partial new audited by third parties like PwC, partial self-certification, partial industry best practices. I guess my question is, if that's the result, and this is a naive question, what does that mean with regard to the, quote, certification, the value of the unique overall certification that this entity is operating a high-security TLD? I think, Andy, you were probably speaking to parts of that answer in terms of the quality of the assessment and who's making the assessment, but I think in a holistic manner, can somebody start to address that question?
Andy, do you want to take that?
Yeah. And this is a this is a great dialogue. So so the thought I had, and I get involved obviously from a sort of from a KPMG perspective, similar to PwC, I get involved in a lot of these types of dialogues as well. And you know, at the end of the day, I think the right answer, and again, this is an initial thought. I think the right answer is when we talk about the quality of an assessor, we want to. We want to make sure that whoever can assess the controls can assess them all. I think it would be very difficult for an organization, for a TLD, to go to like three different places or three different assessors to accomplish their goal of becoming an HSTLD because having more than one place to go to really confuses a lot of different things, like, you know, the contracting process, the evaluation process, the providing evidence process. I see that as super, super painful, and I'd like to try to make this as easy as possible if that's, you know, maintaining quality. So if I have that as sort of a basic assumption, valid or not, I look at different programs that are out there. So the AICPA, from a, you know, from an audit perspective, has rules that need to be maintained so that a firm can go out there and do a proper audit. That's a similar model to like the ISO 27,000 model, where there are qualities of an assessor that are qualified to go out and look at the controls that are required to do an ISO certification. I see the TLD, HSTLD program as in concept similar to that. So there's a sort of an agreed quality of the assessor portion of the program, where we talk about what an assessor needs to be qualified to do all of the controls within the HSTLD. And in the beginning round, that may be we look at things like the ISO standard and say, that's international enough, there's enough control expertise there that even though there's deltas within this program, it would be easy for them to understand those deltas and still be qualified to make an opinion about them. In that same bucket, without being self-serving, I'm trying to not be self-serving about this. We might also say, for instance, the AICPA has good rules. So to get to the PwC thing, that, you know, presumably a PwC auditor would have the ability to look at these controls too. So maybe in that bucket, you have multiple types of things. You have the ISO standards, you have the AICPA standards, and maybe there's a little handful of standard groups that are out there that would provide us the comfort that they would provide the quality for the entire control space. I think that's a big question. I think it's an open question, and I don't know that I have a really good right answer yet, but that's sort of where I'm leaning in the thought.
And this is Brian. Can I get the floor again?
Yeah, Brian, no problem. Hold on. Trying to get the cue. I have Mikey and Evan. So, Brian, if you could keep this rebuttal, perhaps 30 seconds to let those guys get.
I'm sorry, it's not a rebuttal. I'll wait in turn. Thanks.
All right, thanks. Mikey, you have the floor.
This is Mikey. Evan, do you want to go first? I talked a lot. I'd happily follow you if you want.
Well, I just got a couple of questions about all this. I really appreciate and like the talk about breaking things down into the assessments that can be done by existing certifications and those that we have to create on our own. I have a real concern about the fact that about the possibility that the stuff that is closest to our own mechanisms, that is the DNS and related things, could be left to self-assessment, whereas the other standard stuff would be conventional third party. I really would like to avoid something where, half of the stuff that is most boilerplate is done by third parties and half is self-assessed, and the half that's self-assessed is the stuff that's actually most industry-specific to us. So, I mean, I really like what you were saying before about getting the assessors up to speed. I think to a certain extent it's a matter of documentation, that as we break out the stuff that can be done by PCI and ISO and other bodies, that when we cull out the stuff that's got all those NAs on them, I think it's just a matter that if we go into a suitable level of documentation, it makes it a lot easier for third-party assessors to be able to use those controls. I think if we document it and make it very explicit what we want out of it, I think we can get those third parties involved even in the NA components of this. I'm just really concerned about taking the stuff that is closest to us and leaving that totally for self-assessment. I personally think it's just a matter of taking the stuff that's our own and just handling it properly in sufficient detail.
This is Mikey. I want to follow up on that because I'm going to build on what Evan just said. Andy, I'm going to push back a little bit on some of the things that you said, and I'm going to imagine that I'm the controller of a $2.5 billion a year university and a customer of yours because I used to be one of those. And I understand the desire of having a one-size-fits-all assessor, but I'm not sure that that's necessarily something that we need to strive for. I agree with Evan that we don't want to leave all the industry-specific stuff to self-assessment. I also think that in many cases the assessors for these could well be lawyers instead of technicians or accountants because in many cases these are going to be essentially testing for business practices rather than for technical stuff like whether your router's encrypted. And so I'm not sure that a one-size-fits-all approach is something that we need to really strive for. I really agree with Evan that we will improve this program a lot if we can be explicit in what we're asking for and develop a cadre of assessors, and it might even be two flavors of assessors. It might be that there are some that are strong with technical stuff and others that are strong with business stuff. But I agree with Evan that we don't want to self-assess this stuff away because, back to Brian's point, the value of this is in the certification and the fact that a third party has looked at it and given it their approval. I'm not expecting, quite frankly, that some of these assessments can be done by a KPMG PwC person, either from the accounting side or the tech services side, because a lot of this is actually quite unique to the industry we're in, and in many cases is business practices rather than technical. There you go.
All righty. According Brian, I think you were next. Andy, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah.
Okay, yes, so Andy, go, and Brian, you're up next.
Hey, Mikey,
well,
Andy, go ahead. Thanks. I'll make it quick, Mikey. That's great feedback. And you know what I'll do when I'm drawing together some of the thoughts and putting it on the wiki, I'll make sure that assumption of one size fits all doesn't override my content, right? So what I'll do is I'll try to put some options up there for both. I'll try not to make it a leading assumption, so that we can dialogue around both of the models and really pick the one that really works. Great feedback, though. Thank you.
All right, Brian.
I'll look at the floor.
Okay, I guess just to add on to the thought, and maybe this is a wrinkle, but, you know, there is also the issue of cost. And for those registries who already are going to undertake audits, existing audits that we do on a regular basis, having a one-size-fits-all that also might include some elements that are being audited under other programs, which means duplicative cost, is also not very attractive. So I think we need to keep a flexible mind here going forward. And then secondly, we're going to have to get at some point in time to the issue of liability and what liabilities the registries could potentially be taking on, whether it's a self-certification, whether it's a best practice, or whether it's an audited control.
All right. And Andy, this is Mike. If I could perhaps just maybe build on that, to give you some context for Brian's concern. Right now in the new GTLD process, one of the resolutions the board passed in Nairobi was in connection with the trademark clearinghouse database. Now, when that was originally proposed, that was originally designed to be totally self-funded by the trademark owners that would use the database. Over the course of the discussion, this self-funded model is now being self-funded by the people who use it, which now inherently mean the registrars who are being forced to use a mandatory program, which they are now going to have to fund. So, just from a historical context, I wanted to provide that rather recent relevant data point to, I think, provide some context for the concerns that some contracting parties may have regarding things that start out as voluntary but potentially shift to mandatory, and once mandatory, the cost associated with that program. So that's just a data point for your benefit, to, again, provide a little context to, I think, Brian's concern. Brian, is that a fair – did I properly characterize that right, or am I totally misspeaking?
No, and that's just one potential liability that you're speaking to, but that was spot on. Thanks.
All right.
Mike, this is Jonathan. Can I get in the queue on this?
Sure, you haven't spoken all day. Go, John. I got your name right, too. There we go.
Thank you, Mike. Yeah. I've been practicing the fact that I have two ears and one mouth for a reason, right? So in this case, I think we should focus on one of the largest, I think, potential liabilities here, which is that, if I understand it correctly, if a person elects to do an HSTLD, the consequence of meeting any of these metrics is potentially the jeopardy of the operation of the TLD as a registry operator. And so some of the control mechanisms that we have where we're talking about, you know, some nuances of it, I think it's probably important to focus on that larger issue, which would be, you know, if I elect to say this is a voluntary program, if I elect to place myself into a state to do the HSTLD, you know, I'm potentially putting my application in its entirety in jeopardy of not passing if I don't meet any of these standards. That's probably a very significant liability to consider here. That's my thought.
Mike, it's Andy. Can I get in the queue?
Yeah, Andy, go.
That's a fantastic concern, and the bucket that in the bucket that I kind of put all that in is the consequence, right? And you can envision, and actually we talked a little bit about this conceptually during the Nairobi meeting. You can sort of envision sort of two different things. You've got the the registry agreement and you've got the contracts with the registry. So you've got your contract change in a chain, rather, in a TLD. And then you've got this program. And there's, you know, what are the tie-ins? I think the desirable, and again, this is just Andy speaking. I don't mind being wrong so that we can get to right. But the thought is, I think they're related but separate. So I think that you don't necessarily want this program to be able to kill a contract. Rather, you want to use it as a mechanism of transparency of what's going on to the community. So in other words, if a control in the HSTLD program failed or didn't pass an audit or had a problem and an HSTLD either lost its certification or the report card, in the report card model, the control turned red. Those are the two bad things, right? I think it's desirable to allow that to happen and to sort of publish it. So you know, either in the report card you get a red or in the case of a certification you lose your certification, but not have that have a direct consequence on the contract. Because unless, of course, the control is related to something that's required by contract, right? But the contracts, as I understand them, for the TLDs, you know, wouldn't include all of these controls, nor should they. So, in other words, the TLD could continue to operate and maintain its contract, but the negative consequence would be that it lost its certification or got a no-no mark, a red mark, or whatever the final decision would be on a report card. So they're separate events. There's consequence. But it's more of a transparency to the community consequence than it is an actual being able to operate consequence. Does that make sense?
Well, and it does, although I think there's two sort of panes to that window. One would be that on an ongoing basis, what you're saying for validation purposes is entirely accurate. But I also believe that just in principle, that person failing to meet these standards, assuming that they would elect volunteer that their TLD is an HSTLD, this could essentially mean passing or failing proceeding in the delegation process at the application stage of the TLD, so at its first inception. So there's a far more significant consequence at the beginning. And then on an ongoing sort of an off basis, I definitely agree with you. I believe that at the application stage, that there's a significant sort of pass or fail metric that we're putting in front of people.
Okay, can I
quickly? Sure. So let me just a little chair of prerogative here. We have about 5 minutes left in the call. Although we weren't able to get to any control discussion today, I think this discussion has been very fruitful. We'll provide some important, data points and material in our next upcoming snapshot. So, Andy, I'm going to let you respond, and then I believe we'll have Mikey. And then what I'd like to try to do is perhaps wrap up this session, and in wrapping up this session, I will just, as standard practice, I will go through and give everyone on the call a last-minute final word. So that's where we're at. Andy, Mikey, and then we're going to wrap up.
I'll give up my last piece of the floor for Mikey because my stuff can come out later.
Okay.
Okay, this is Mikey. Thanks, Andy. To Jonathan's point about pass-fail grade, I think that if this gets included in the DAG as a pass-fail item on the selection and delegation of a TLD, we're right back to the discussion that Paul Stahara was very concerned about earlier on, the voluntary nature of this, because his point about the voluntary thing was that as long as it was voluntary and as long as it didn't add a criteria to the DAG, he was fine. But if we're now saying that this is a criteria, a pre-delegation or for delegation, we've just reopened a very tasty issue. The second point is that there's another liability that we need to consider, and that is if I'm a registrant and I register a domain in this new TLD and I build my brand around it, and the TLD now becomes uncertified, and thus the trust between me and my end users is reduced, I'm going to be quite grouchy. So I think we need to figure out ways to handle out-of-compliance situations besides just pass-fail things. This is not unlike the situation that arises in publicly traded companies when great pains are taken to avoid an audit letter, which essentially is the worst situation for any company to get, that they fail their audit. I think without some sort of protection both for the registry but also for the registrants that have presumably spent a lot of money building a brand around a high security TLD, we've got liabilities flying all over the place.
Okay, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to start from the top of the list. Frank, I don't think you've said any. Would you like to say anything? Or was that Francisco? Who's the first person you called on the roll call today, Andy? Was it Frank or Francisco?
Jonathan, actually. Okay. Jonathan Frakes. I heard Frakes and thought I said Francisco. Sorry.
Oh, Jonathan. I wrote Frakes. I'm sorry. I wrote down. I can pronounce his first name now. I'm just misspelling his last name. There we go. Jonathan, do you want to have any final words today on today's call before we wrap up?
No, I've gotten enough in. Thank you for the opportunity, and good morning to everyone.
Righty. Mikey, you just spoken. Is there anything else you want to wrap up before concluding today's call?
No, I've certainly said enough today. Thanks.
All right. Mr. Piscatello, Dave, you're up. Any contributions?
Like Dave's on mute. Yeah.
Okay. Next, I think we had John. John, do you have any contributions?
No, the only thing that I would, I guess, mention is that there's been a lot of talk about liability, and all of that can be handled contractually. I mean, the concept of a certification mark is not a new one, and there's plenty out there, Underwriters Laboratory, Realtor, et cetera, and they all have the same sorts of controls and obligations. So that I think we can handle that via contracts, and I don't think we should let that get in the way. I think some of the issues relating to mandatory, I think we've also vetted those back and forth, and it's, you know, I don't think anybody's intention to make this into a program that is going to sort of backdoor a mandatory obligation. So that's all I have to say.
Okay. I would tend to agree with those points. Myself, I have nothing to say. Evan and Simon and Brian. So, Evan, that's all I have on left on the list. So, Evan, you have the floor.
I just want to build on what was just said. I think we've been in violent agreement, I think, amongst the people on this list about voluntary versus mandatory. I don't know what it is we need to do within the pecking order of ICANN to make sure it's seen that we do not want this to be mandatory, back door, front door, or any other way. I just think, you know, we need to nail this down.
I think I speak for everyone on the list in achieving that nailing down process, because that does allow us to reach closure on what we're trying to do here. Simon.
Yeah, hi, just a quick update on something slightly different, actually. I took an action last week to create an additional column onto that sheet of controls and take a look at what existing practices we were already doing as a CC and identify the gap. We're underway with that. It's going to take a bit of time, so 300 or so controls. Our aim is to come back with some kind of gap and also some kind of analysis of actually how much time might it take us should we try and get to a point where we met every control, so that hopefully that will give the group an indication of the kind of work effort and therefore possible costs it would take to go from a CC-style organization to running a secure top-level domain. So that's the plan. I would hope to have something within the next week to 2 weeks into the group.
Simon, that would be phenomenal. And perhaps our last speaker, Brian. Brian, I think you were just mentioning how you were talking with Afilias's auditors, PwC. Would you perhaps maybe be able to undertake a similar self-analysis as to what Simon and Nominet is undertaking to provide some costing and, if you will, implementation data on these potential controls we're looking at? Is that something Afilias might be able to do?
Yeah, I'd be happy to bring that to the group, hopefully before the next call or certainly within two. I'll endeavor to do that. And the only other comment I have is I think the conversation today was useful. We fleshed out some important structural issues. And with regard, I don't know who made the comment about liability questions can be resolved through contracts. I also agree with that point. I'm looking much forward to the conversation when we get down to the question of indemnification, because that's where the rubber hits the road. And as they say, everyone loves a prison except when it's in their backyard. So I think that's going to be a very important conversation when we get to it. Thanks.
Excellent. Andy, real quick, as far as other registry operators, because I really do like the internal analysis that Simon has decided to undertake, besides VeriSign and Afilias, do we have any other registry operators that are participating in the group? Oh, wait, NZ, don't we? NZ, Frank.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe we'll reach out to Frank and see if they might be able to participate in this self-assessment as well. Again, Simon, thanks for taking the lead on that. I really welcome that initiative.
No, it's a pleasure. Just a quick word of warning, I guess. There are going to be some of the bits in those controls that we might not be able to elaborate upon just because it may be seen as being confidential or in some way anti-competitive if we put something in there. So we've just got to be mindful of that when we put it in there.
Totally understand that, and any redactions that you undertake are appreciative, and I'm sure Afilias and VeriSign will probably undertake the same standards. But again, I think if we can, I think what Brian was, I think, talking about on his thing is getting some idea of what we're looking at from a costing standpoint, because if this is a voluntary program, part of the, if you will, viability of it is there a potential cost recovery? Because if it's X, you know, I want to be very careful here about talking about cost of a domain name service, but, you know, are we talking about something that is, you know, a $20 upsell, or are we talking something about a $1,000 upsell? These are some of the issues that some of your analysis might be able to shed some light on to regarding the commercial viability of this program. Okay.
Mike, is that restricted to current, like, incumbent registry operators, or can us wannabes, you know, applicants or folks who are servicing the new TLDs step up and participate in that?
You know me, Jonathan. I'm an open and transparent guy. Anybody that wants to say, hey, the more the as I operate, the more the merrier. So I
have to decide if I'm stepping in front of traffic to offer that, but I think I'd like to participate in that.
I'm gunning the engine here.
Choo-choo. Jonathan, obviously I think some of the work, I know Mind Machines has the, I believe, the software license for the, what is it, the COCO that is used in some CC. So if there are some data points there that could be brought to the group, again, the more data points that we bring and provide an analysis, the better our final work output. So, again, I welcome the additional data points.
Thank you.
So, I think we are done. And, again, thanks for a constructive call, and look forward to list traffic and wiki traffic updates and next week's call. Thanks again, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Michael.